All right. Buddhism is concerned with man. Psychoanalysis is concerned with man. But how are they concerned with him? In what way? They're not, we may say, concerned with him in the abstract as an idea or a concept. They're concerned with man very much in the concrete. They're concerned with him not just theoretically, but also practically, which means, in simple language, that Buddhism is not just a philosophy, not just a system of metaphysics, however wonderful, but also a way of life. And in the same way, psychoanalysis is not just a psychology, not just a system of descriptive psychology, giving a catalogue of mental states and functions, but also a therapy. And I think we may quite correctly describe Buddhism also as a therapy. It's significant, perhaps, that the Buddha himself, the Enlightened One, is known in the scriptures as the great physician, the great physician of the ills of men. It's rather interesting, rather instructive to have here a comparison with Christianity. Christ is very often called the Good Shepherd. So this is quite interesting. You get the Buddha called the Good Physician. Christ is called the Good Shepherd. So if you compare the founder of a religion with a physician, to what are you implicitly comparing the followers? If the teacher is a physician, then what are the followers? The sick, the patients. So what about the shepherd? If the teacher, if the founder is compared with a shepherd, then the followers are compared with sheep. Yes. And this is interesting, this is significant, because before his death, Christ said to the apostles, "Feed my sheep." Feed my sheep. Now, patients have to cooperate intelligently with the doctor. If you go to an analyst, even if you may lie down on the couch, but he doesn't do it all for you. You've got to cooperate intelligently. But it isn't quite like that with sheep. Sheep simply allow themselves to be led. And I think this isn't a coincidence. It isn't a coincidence that Christians tend to think of themselves as sheep. It is in accordance, we may say, with this whole attitude of infantile dependence which is encouraged by all forms of theism, all forms of belief in a personal God, a supreme being. Now, the fact that Buddhism is a therapy, or can be described as a therapy, is not only indicated by the fact that the Buddha is called the great physician, but also by another fact, namely, that in Buddhism, what we call the Four Noble Truths occupy a very important place. Now, very often these Four Noble Truths are regarded as summarizing the whole of Buddhism. The first noble truth is suffering, that there is suffering in this world, mental and physical. Secondly, the cause of suffering, which is basically our own wrong mental attitudes, especially our thirst or craving. Third noble truth, the cessation of suffering, which comes about through the cessation of craving, the correction of our wrong mental attitude, and this cessation of suffering ultimately is identical with a state of complete or supreme bliss or nirvana. And fourthly, the way leading to the cessation of suffering, in other words, the Noble Eightfold Path. So according to scholars, these four noble truths of Buddhism are based on an ancient pre-Buddhist medical formula. First of all, the disease. Secondly, the cause of the disease. Thirdly, the cure. And fourthly, the treatment leading to the cure. So this sort of coincidence, this sort of resemblance, is, we may say, no accident. Because in order to discover the causes of suffering or of disease, one has to go very, very deeply. And therefore, we find that both Buddhism and psychoanalysis are concerned with man, and concerned with man in depth. Because the sources of suffering, the sources of disease, are not found on the surface in either case. They're found in the depths. So both Buddhism and psychoanalysis are concerned with man in depth. They're not only concerned with the conscious mind, the surface mind, but concerned with the subconscious, with the unconscious. And we do get these conceptions in traditional Buddhism. In the Theravada Buddhism of Ceylon and Burma, for instance, you get the conception of the Pavanga Sota, which means quite literally the stream of unconscious mental activity. I mean, a very modern concept, but one which Buddhism has had in the Theravada practically from the beginning. And then again, in the Yogacara school, there is the conception of what is called the Alaya Vijnana, or the store consciousness, in which impressions are stored up, and the contents of which we are usually unconscious of. So both Buddhism and psychoanalysis regard the mind as existing, as it were, on different levels. They're aware that the mind has depths, that beneath the conscious there is the subconscious, even the unconscious. And both further regard the mind, whether conscious or unconscious, regard it as dynamic, as a process, not as a thing. Not as a tabula rasa, as it's called, a sort of blank sheet of paper, as Locke thought. Conceives it dynamically as a force, as an energy. Psychoanalysis, for instance, speaks in terms of libido, which means sort of vital impulse or energy, especially sexual energy. And Buddhism, in the same way, speaks of man, an ordinary man, unenlightened man, as being dominated and controlled and driven, even, by tanha or trishna, which is literally thirst, in the sense of craving. And in Buddhism, there are three kinds of thirst or craving. That for sensuous experience, experience through the five physical senses. That for continued individual existence. And that for annihilation. It's rather significant, it's rather modern in a way, that Buddhism, traditionally, has always recognized that there is in some people a sort of craving for death. It's what we may describe as something corresponding to Freud's death wish. And it's rather significant, as I've said, that Buddhism also does recognize this. We may also say, I think, that in the Buddhist conception of craving for conditioned or continued existence, and also craving for annihilation, these two, I think we can see here also a correspondence with what Fromm calls biophilia, or love of life, and necrophilia, or love of death. It's also significant that the Buddha seems to have regarded many of the religious teachings of his time as not so much religious or spiritual teachings as rationalizations of craving, either for continued personal existence or the craving for annihilation. And traditionally in Buddhism, theism, any form of belief in a supreme being with its corollary, sort of personal immortality after death, is regarded as a sort of rationalization of our craving, our thirst for continued personal existence. Now, psychoanalysis also speaks in terms of what is called the id. This term was coined by Freud, and it means a sort of impersonal mass of interacting energies or forces constituting the unconscious. And with this we come, we may say, to the heart of the therapeutic process. Freud says, and this is the sort of slogan of psychoanalysis, where there was id, there shall be ego. Ego with a capital E, not in the ordinary sense. Ego represents the conscious personality, the conscious individuality, if you like. And psychoanalysis is essentially concerned with the transformation of the unconscious into consciousness, with the transformation of the inchoate mass, as it were, of the id into the comparatively organized and patterned harmony of the ego. Ego, again, in the Freudian sense, not in the popular, the undesirable sense. So psychoanalysis effects this transformation of id into ego, saying where there was id, there shall be ego, effects it by means of various techniques of free association. Now, Buddhism has the same sort of preoccupation. It wants to replace thirst or craving by nirvana. In the language of the Mahayana, it wants to transform the passions into enlightenment, wants to transmute the five poisons into the five wisdoms, and so on. And it does this. It effects this transformation and this transmutation by means of mindfulness, by means of concentration, and meditation. And under these three headings, there are various practices, as some of you know. We've no time for details. And we see, therefore, that both Buddhism and psychoanalysis emphasize the importance of self-knowledge. Not only self-knowledge, but self-understanding. This is not sort of objective rational knowledge, not knowledge of oneself as an object, because this would be mere descriptive psychology, and it would have no therapeutic value, but it means, rather, a living experience in awareness of one's own being, of what one is.